it is noteworthy that the prophet Job did not say that the hireling was awaiting the end of his labor, but the end of his work, in order to indicate what we are explaining, that is, that the whole soul that loves does not await the end of her labor, but the end of her work. Her work is to love, and of this work, love, she awaits the end, which is the perfection and completeness of it. Until this work is accomplished, the soul is always in the condition of the picture Job paints in his passage. She considers her days and months empty, and counts her nights as long and wearisome. We have explained how the soul that loves God must not desire or hope for any other reward for her services than the perfect love of God. Stanza 10, Introduction. The soul, then, in this condition of love is like a sick man who is extremely tired, and having lost his taste and appetite, finds all food nauseating, and everything a disturbance and annoyance. In everything he thinks or sees, he has only one desire, the desire for health, and all that does not lead to this is a bother and a burden to him. Since the soul has reached this sickness of love of God, she has three traits. In all things that are offered to her or with which she deals, she has never before her that longing for her health, which is her beloved. Even though she cannot help being occupied with them, she always has her heart fixed on him. The second trait, arising from this first, is the loss of taste for all things. The third then results, which is that all these things molest her, and all dealings with others are burdensome and annoying. The reason for these traits, deduced from what has been said, is that since the palate of the soul's will has tasted this food of love of God, her will is inclined immediately to seek and enjoy her beloved in everything that happens and in all her occupations, without looking for any satisfaction or concern of her own. Mary Magdalene acted similarly when with ardent love she was searching for him in the garden, thinking that he was the gardener. Without any further reasoning or consideration, she pleaded with him, "If you have taken him from me, tell me, and I will take him away." John 20:15. Having a similar yearning to find him in all things, and not immediately finding him as she desires, but rather quite the contrary, not only does the soul fail to find satisfaction in these things, but they also become a torment to her, and sometimes a very great one. Such souls suffer much in dealing with people and with business matters, for these contacts hinder rather than help them to their goal. The bride clearly indicates in the canticle these three traits she had when searching for her bridegroom. "I looked for him and did not find him, but they who go about the city find me and wounded me, and the guards of the walls took my mantle from me." Canticle 5:6-7. Those who go about the city refer to the affairs of the world. When they find the soul who is searching for God, they inflict upon her many wounds of sorrow, pain, and displeasure, for not only does she fail to find her desire in them, but she is also impeded by them. Those who guard the wall of contemplation to prevent the soul from entering are the devils and the negotiations of the world, and they take away the mantle of the peace and quietude of loving contemplation. The soul that loves God derives a thousand displeasures and annoyances from all of these. Conscience that as long as she is in this life without the vision of God, she cannot free herself from them to either a small or a great degree. She continues her prayers to the Beloved and recites the following stanza. Extinguish these miseries, since no one else can stamp them out, and may my eyes behold you, because you are the light, and I would open them to you alone. Commentary. She continues in this stanza to ask the Beloved to put an end to her longings and pains, since he alone can do this, and no one else, and to accomplish this so that the eyes of her soul may be able to see him, since he alone is the light they behold, and she wants to employ them in him alone. Extinguish these miseries. A characteristic of the desires of love is that all deeds and words unconformed with what the will loves weary, tire, annoy, and displease the soul as she beholds that her desire goes unfulfilled. She refers to this weariness she suffers in order to see God as these miseries, and nothing but possession of the Beloved can extinguish them. She says he extinguishes them by his presence and refreshes her as cool water soothes a man exhausted from the heat. She uses the word extinguish to indicate that she is suffering from the fire of love, since no one else can stamp them out. To further urge and persuade her Beloved to grant her petition, she declares that, since he alone suffices to satisfy her need, he must be the one to extinguish these miseries. It is noteworthy that God is very ready to comfort and satisfy the soul in her needs and afflictions when she neither has nor desires consolation and satisfaction outside of him. The soul, possessing nothing that might withhold her from God, cannot remain long without a visit from the Beloved. And may my eyes behold you. That is, may I see you face to face with the eyes of my soul, because you are their light. Regardless of the fact that God is the supernatural light of the soul's eyes, and that without this light she is enveloped in darkness, she affectionately calls him here the light of her eyes, just as a man might call the one he loves the light of his eyes in order to show his affection. These two verses are like saying, since my eyes have no other light, neither through nature nor through love, than you, may my eyes behold you, because you are their light in every way. David noted that the absence of this light when he lamented, the light of my eyes itself is not with me. Psalm 37. Tobias did the same. What joy can be mine, since I am seated in darkness and do not see the light of heaven? Tobias 5:12. Through these words, he gave expression to his desire for the clear vision of God, because the light of heaven is the Son of God. As St. John says, the heavenly city has no need of the sun nor the moon, to shine in it, because the brightness of God illuminates it, and the Lamb is the lamp thereof. The Apocalypse 21:23. Revelations 21:23. And I would open them to you alone. With this line, the soul desires to oblige the bridegroom to reveal this light of her eyes, not only because she lives in darkness, in that her eyes have no other light, but also because she wants to keep her eyes for him alone. As the soul, longing to focus the eyes of her will upon the light of something outside of God, is justly deprived of the divine light, insofar as the spiritual powers she has for receiving God's light are occupied with this other light, so also does the soul that closes its eyes to all things in order to open them to God alone merit congruously the illumination of the divine light. Stanza 11, Introduction. It should be known that the loving bridegroom of souls cannot long watch them suffering alone, as this soul is suffering, because, as he says through Zechariah, their afflictions touch him in the apple of his eye. Zechariah 2:8. Especially when these afflictions are the outcome of love for him, as are those of this soul. He also declares through Isaiah, "Before they call, I will hear. While they are yet with the word in their mouth, I will hear them." Isaiah 65:24. The wise man says of him that if the soul seeks him as money, she will find him. Proverbs 2:4-5. Apparently God granted a certain spiritual feeling of his presence to this loving soul, whose prayers are so enkindled, and who seeks him more covetously than one would seek money, since she has left herself and all things for him. In the spiritual sense of his presence, he revealed some deep glimpses of his divinity and beauty, by which he greatly increased her fervor and desire to see him. As a man throws water into the forge to stir up and intensify the fire, so the Lord usually grants to some souls that walk in these fiery longings of love certain signs of his excellence to make them more fervent and further prepare them for the favors he wishes to grant them later. Since the soul saw and experienced through that obscure presence the supreme good and beauty hidden there, she recites the following stanza, dying with the desire to see him. "Reveal your presence, and may the vision of your beauty be my death, for the sickness of love is not cured except by your very presence and image." Commentary. The soul desiring to be possessed by this immense God, for love of whom she feels that her heart is robbed and wounded, unable to endure her sickness any longer, deliberately asks him in this stanza to show her his beauty, his divine essence, and to kill her with this revelation, and thereby free her from the flesh, since she cannot see and enjoy him as she wants. She makes this request by displaying before him the sickness and yearning of her heart, in which she perseveres suffering for love of him, unable to find a cure in anything less than this glorious vision of his divine essence. The verse follows. reveal your presence. In explanation of this verse, it should be known that God's presence can be of three kinds. The first is His presence by essence. In this way, He is present not only in the holiest souls, but also in sinners and in all other creatures. For with this presence, He gives them life and being. Should this essential presence be lacking to them, they would all be annihilated. Thus, this presence is never wanting to the soul. The second is His presence by grace, in which He abides in the soul, pleased and satisfied with it. Not all have this presence of God. Those who fall into mortal sin lose it. The soul cannot know naturally if it has this presence. The third is His presence by spiritual affection, for God usually grants His spiritual presence to devout souls in many ways, by which He refreshes, delights, and gladdens them. Yet, these many kinds of spiritual presence, just as the others, are all hidden, for in them God does not reveal Himself as He is, since the conditions of this life will not allow such a manifestation. Thus the above verse, "Reveal your presence," could be understood of any of these three ways in which God is present. Since it is certain that at least in the first way God is ever present in the soul, she does not ask Him to be present in her, but that He so revealed His hidden presence, whether natural, spiritual, or affective, that she may be able to see Him in His divine being and beauty, as He gives the soul natural being through His essential presence and perfects her through His presence by grace. She begs Him to glorify her also with His manifest glory. Yet insofar as this soul is full of fervor and tender love of God, we should understand that this presence she asks the Beloved to reveal refers chiefly to a certain affective presence which the Beloved accords her. This presence is so sublime that the soul feels an immense hidden being is there, from which God communicates to her some semi-clear glimpses of His divine beauty. These bear such an effect on the soul that she ardently longs and faints with desire for what she feels hidden there in that presence, which is similar to what David felt when he exclaimed, "My soul longs and faints for the courts of the Lord." Psalm 83. At this time, the soul faints with longing to be engulfed in that supreme good she feels present and hidden. For although it is hidden, she has a notable experience of the good and the delight present there. Accordingly, she is drawn and carried toward this good more forcibly than any material object is pulled toward its center by gravity. With this longing and heartfelt desire, unable to contain herself any longer, the soul begs, "Reveal your presence." Moses had this very experience on Mount Sinai. While standing in God's presence, he was able to get such sublime and profound glimpses of the height and the beauty of the hidden divinity that, unable to endure it, he asked God twice to reveal His glory. "You say that you know me by name, and that I have found favor before you. If therefore I have found favor in your presence, show me your face, that I may know you, and find before your eyes the grace which I desire fulfilled. Exodus 33:12-13. That is, to reach the perfect love of the glory of God. Yet the Lord answered, "You shall not be able to see my face, for no man shall see me and live." Exodus 33:20. This is like saying, "You ask a difficult thing of me, Moses, for such is the beauty of my face, and the delight derived from the sight of my being, that your soul would be unable to withstand it in this life, as weak as this is." The soul knows that she cannot see him in his beauty in this kind of life. She knows this either through God's answer to Moses or through her experience of what is hidden here in the presence of God. For even though he appears but vaguely, she faints. Hence, she anticipates the reply that can be made to her, as it was to Moses, and says, "And may the vision of your beauty be my death." This is like saying, since the delight arises from the sight of your being and beauty is unendurable, and since I must die in seeing you, may the vision of your beauty be my death. It is known that there are two visions which will kill a man because of the inability of human nature to suffer their force and vigor. One is that of the basilisk, from which it is said one dies immediately. The other is the vision of God. Yet the causes are very different, for the sight of one kills with a terrible poison, and that of God by an immense health and glorious good. The soul does nothing very outstanding by wanting to die at the sight of the beauty of God in order to enjoy him forever. Were she to have but a foreglimpse of the height and beauty of God, she would not only desire death in order to see him now forever, as she here desires, but she would very gladly undergo 1,000 singularly bitter deaths to see him only for a moment. And having seen him, she would ask to suffer just as many more, that she might see him for another moment.